Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome, everyone, to our podcast series, Hidden Growth Champions. I've got in our studio today Konstantinos Vosos. Konstantinos is a well-seasoned executive in the consumer products and pharmaceutical industry, and it's great to have you in our studio today. Konstantinos, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Sar. Let me first say that, as you probably figure out, I'm Greek, originally born and raised in Greece, and eventually through my career, I had the pleasure to work in different parts of the world, in the US, Latin America, you know, back in Europe, Spain, Italy. Now I'm based in Switzerland. And my experience spans the fast-moving consumer goods with 12 years with Colgate-Palmolive, and also the consumer healthcare with 10 years with GlaxoSmithKline. So I'm happy to be here and looking forward to our interesting discussion.
Oh, that's fantastic. Konstantinos, I mean, you are in the fortunate position of having witnessed not only the pandemic, but some of the trends and the market changes that have been taking place even beforehand in a very live, real industry setting. So there's a bit of a story to tell there, and I'm sure some of the things you've been noticing and you and your team have been tackling and getting their heads around are things that may be of interest or maybe of relevance to our audiences. So I'm going to take you kind of a couple of years back into where you started seeing the shifts. I know in the industry there have been much corporate activity, many M&A transactions that have taken place. But once those have kind of been integrated, brought into the business as usual, what are the kind of things that you started noticing even before the pandemic that made you think, hang on, there's a different trajectory here. We need to start thinking differently about growth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's common knowledge that overall and around the world, the government health systems are under distress, financial distress. And this is mainly being driven by the increasing cost of healthcare combined by aging population. So obviously that creates price pressure to the big pharmaceuticals. And of course, we see generics penetrating with a bigger presence. And of course, a lot of the government supporting that to try and control the cost. Hmm. We also saw a few years back the emergence of health tech, which is the intersection between healthcare and technology. And we're starting to see more and more artificial intelligence stepping in and disrupting the traditional, let's say, business models. Just to give you an example from this morning, I was reading about an MIT-developed algorithm that after the patient has coughed next to a smartphone, the algorithm is able to detect with very high accuracy, 98%, whether you know that patient has COVID or not. It's still early days, but you know that should give you a little bit of a flavor of what this could mean. You know, there are numbers that are bordering 5 to 6 billion at-home diagnostics in the next 5 years. So consumers really taking ownership of their health, and that being facilitated by technology. And we see that across the industry, and more is coming. And all that was really starting to emerge years before COVID. So nothing that what I've mentioned is related to COVID.
Hmm. Now, one of the things that we're certainly seeing across industries is the emergence and the strength that consumers are bringing into the interactions with industry, and you've certainly mentioned that in the context of emerging markets and specifically in consumer products. If I had to ask you, if you had to kind of extend this into the future, are you seeing a future within which the consumer really comes into the center of the ecosystem, where the way we think about delivering value, the way we develop products, the way we understand information around the customer really becomes the core of and the guide to a lot of things that we do. Or is this simply smarter use of technology?
What's your absolutely. Absolutely, the consumer is at the center. I mean, we see that across many different examples. I will mention one that comes to mind, which is Walgreens in the US partnering with Village MD and creating what they call primary care everywhere. So that can be delivered at the clinic, you know, through a virtual visit, so telehealth, or even at home, if that's what the consumer chooses. And I think that shows that by putting the consumer slash patient at the center, new business models will evolve. You know, that consumer and patient's needs will be better covered. And hopefully with high quality and affordable, in an affordable way. So definitely those companies that are able to do exactly that are the companies that will win in the future.
Hmm. Konstantinos, I'm just curious, does that have an impact on demand itself, or are we simply vying for the same share of wallet, just using different channels, different business models, different commercial ways to monetize and to make real the transaction? What does it do to demand itself, if anything?
Well, if you look at consumer healthcare, you know, last year, right in the, you know, the year that pandemic took a strong foothold, consumer healthcare did grow. If I remember the number correctly, around 4% globally. And, you know, not a lot of other industries did. So that's, I think, a strong indication that there is growth coming our way. The second is you see a shift in consumption patterns. So for example, last year we saw VMS, vitamins, mineral supplements, growing, you know, 6.5%. And we saw, for example, cough and cold dropping and in terms of their growth rates. And this is understandable because you're obviously through social distancing, the use of masks, you have less incidence of traditional cold and flu, right? Mm-hmm. So overall, we see the pie getting larger. We see consumers becoming more and more involved in their care. We see self-care being of higher importance to them. We see internet searches, you know, Google searches related to healthcare increasing year after year. And we also see, of course, technology enabling that consumer to take control. And just to mention a number, you know, even before the pandemic, we had 30% of consumers saying that they trust technology to improve their health. I'm pretty sure if we measure this in 2021, that number will have gone up, and I expect it to continue to go up.
Okay. What does this do to the way consumer product companies, whether in pharmaceuticals or even beyond that, are thinking about addressing? Do they respond differently? And what has been your experience within the industry? Because the kind of trends that and changes that you're talking about are certainly from the way I listen to it, seem significantly more than simply addressing pockets or being able to more efficiently serve consumers. They seem as though they have an impact on the economics of the sector. They have an impact on how companies choose to play more than just the tactics they use. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, from a channel point of view, you know, you see the, you know, all the consumer healthcare players being active in the online channels, and particularly, you know, during and after the pandemic, that's a no-brainer. You know, we've seen in certain markets, you know, the penetration. So the number of consumers that choose to order online for their healthcare needs. In Brazil, for example, that number doubled. So 27% had done that before the pandemic. And during the pandemic, you know, that number doubled, and of course it will continue to grow in the future. So definitely from a channel point of view, you know, you need to be within the e-pharmacy channel, and you need to be aware that the competitive environment is different. You're not only competing with your well-known and sizable direct competitors of all times, but you're competing versus new players, smaller players that are able to punch above their weight. They're able to introduce products with very low barriers to entry. They're able to communicate what's differentiating about them. And if you look at the numbers, the smaller brands are growing faster than the bigger ones on the online channel. So definitely that's one part. I think the second part where it gets more messy is around the health tech that we talked earlier. And when you look at consumer goods, we haven't seen yet a major innovation in terms of healthcare and technology coming from the traditional consumer health players. So this is something that I expect to happen in the future. You know, different business models need to be developed, obviously. There's new competition coming from technologically advanced companies. And I expect we will see more partnering and more M&A happening in that space.
Konstantinos, I just want to dial back for a second into those new forms of competition, into the smaller players punting above their weight. I had a very interesting conversation this morning with a client of ours, and he reminded me of this famous quote about new entrants entering an industry, where he said, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and at the end you win. Now, it's been attributed to quite a few individuals who supposedly said that first, but wherever that originated from, where or what have you seen in terms of the new players coming in that makes you think that they are more than just the ones we ignore or perhaps laugh at or dismiss? But in fact, if I take it 5, 7, 10 years into the future, the landscape could actually look quite different. And just having a strong balance sheet and the ability to buy them out will not be enough.
Well, I mean, there's always the option to buy. So let's not discard that. So in the example that you gave, you either, you know, compete directly, or you compete and eventually you see something that really stands out in the business model of that competitor. And there's always the option of acquisition. But I'll mention an example from the US. Again, it's in VMS category. And that's a company that, you know, within a period of 4 years developed a business that is 30 million strong with very high levels of profitability. And I think what distinguishes that company is its ability to identify consumer trends as they emerge, based on mainly around searches on Amazon. And in 6 weeks' time, being able to develop a concept, convert it into a final product through third-party contract manufacturing, and putting it on the virtual shelf of Amazon. And for me, this is something that in a traditional, you know, innovation funnel model of you know, a big consumer healthcare company is unthinkable, that in 6 weeks you can have a concept to product. So that's something that a smaller player with a completely different business model, very asset light, as I mentioned, and very focused around what the consumer needs, will develop it, will deliver it, will measure it, and will tweak it along the way to make it, you know, even more successful. And you know, this is a company that over 4 years has introduced, you know, close to 100 SKUs. And again, this is a business model very different than what you would see, for example, from you know, some of the bigger players in the industry.
Now, you've had the opportunity of working within some of the bigger players for a significant period of time. So I want to kind of take you for a moment into those boardrooms, into those discussions and meetings in which you had to find new avenues to grow. You had to find a pathway beyond the traditional large markets which you could rely on. And you had to battle some of those new form competitors. And could you talk us a little bit about how one goes about finding and then capitalizing on some of those new opportunity areas. And I know in some of our earlier discussions, some of those were pretty surprising. They were not what you thought they might be on day one.
Well, I think the first thing you need to consider, and I strongly believe that, is that growth is a question of mindset. So if you don't believe that growth can be found, even in an economy that is collapsing, and I'll mention my home country, you know, we went through a terrible crisis starting in 2009 and almost for a decade. And, you know, GDP declined 25% over that period. There were, you know, massive layoffs, unemployment, you know, quadrupled, et cetera, et cetera. So really a very tough economic environment. So one, looking at it from a distance, will say, you know, no, growing in Greece during that period is impossible. And I beg to differ. And I think the first thing is, do we really as a team collectively believe that we can grow? Can we just push aside all the noise coming from the news channel, from journalists, from economic gurus around what will happen to the economy, and focus on the opportunities? And when I say about that, I think it's important to make some tough decisions when, you know, the economy is not performing well. It's exactly the time where you need to go back and look at, you know, what are the products that I own? What are the products that I market? How do I go about, you know, communicating? What are their differentiated benefits? Do I invest in all? Do I make some tough choices? Do I pull the plug in terms of support in some of them? Do I change the business model? You know, the famous route to market. Do I go just face to face, you know, selling in pharmacies? Do I explore alternative ways? And I think you need to ask all those questions to be able to identify what you're going to do differently. Because, and we know very well the quote from Einstein, if we keep doing the same things and expecting different results, that's the definition of insanity, right? So you can't do exactly what you were doing before when you are in such a crisis environment. And of course, I strongly believe that the people are the ones that will make the difference. And I'm not saying this in a general way, but if you're able to bring the team on board, if you're able as a team to agree that you're going to go for it, if you're able to, you know, put emotions aside and make rational choices, which brands you support, which not, if you're able to invite your suppliers and customers and sit down and figure out a way that you can win in this tough environment, I think you come out as a winner. And I have experience in that. I'm not just saying it because, you know, it's good to hear, you know, it can be done.
Yeah, no, very much so. Something we can certainly relate to. I guess one of the things that we've noticed is the word partnership is so often being used, and people in leadership positions very often recognize that they may not have all the capabilities within their organization. But there are different types of partnerships, right? There are those that are very transactional and those that are literally can venture into the blue ocean, that can think and envision something that's greater than how we operated or partnered in the past. In some cases, we even see that in the same day when we sit in on some of these partner presentations. And I guess something that you said earlier really resonated with me, which is it all starts with mindset. The way that you perceive the opportunity is as important, if not more, of what the opportunity is, because ultimately the numbers are what the numbers are. So with that in mind, help me to understand when you were facing those situations, working with your own team, working with quite an elaborate and a complex organization that you had to navigate. How did you go about influencing the mindset? How did that come about?
Well, it's not easy. I'll start by saying this. I strongly believe, and I am, I think, a representation of that, that you need to have both a realistic approach, so keep your feet in the ground, but also, you know, think positively. You cannot be either or. So if you're, you know, attached to the ground, but you can't raise your head, you'll never move. but you also can't be out in the clouds and forget the reality. So I think that's a good balance between, you know, doing things that make sense, but also thinking more out into the future. I think the second thing is, you know, being curious. You know, ask people you know outside of the industry, look for different trends, read a lot, and surround yourself with people that are truly different than you. And I'm not saying this because, you know, suddenly, you know, cultural diversity and ethnic diversity is on the table. I really believe that a sound businessman would never care if the person in his team, he is black or white, he is a man or a woman, his sexual orientation. The only thing you care is if that person is adding value and helping the team move forward. And the more diverse your team, the more ideas will come to the table, the more challenge within the team will happen in a positive way, and the team outcome will be better. So I think that's the second one, how you set up your team for success. And then eventually it comes down to credibility. And, you know, there will be a large part of the organization that when you tell them, we're going to grow this year when, you know, the economy is collapsing, they're going to say, yeah, okay. And I think to get those on board, you need some early wins, some success stories that you know, publicize, you make them really visible. And then collectively, we all start to believe that it can happen. So it's a combination of things. It's not one thing, one button that you push. But I think it's doable, and it all starts with a mindset, as we said.
Konstantinos, something that you shared with me in previous conversations, also the work that you've done with your team, where what you're describing now is not just the process we mechanistically go through, or we just measure by volume, the number of conversations we have, for example, the number of presentations we make, but it actually kind of hits very close to home, right? You're working with human beings. You're working with human beings who are concerned. You're working with human beings who may be very anxious as we navigate quite an uncertain environment. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, how when we help others and when we help ourselves to adopt a new mindset, become more versatile in the way we see the world, what are some of the things that one could do, you know, close by with your own team? Just maybe help us and share some of those encounters. Because certainly for many of our discussions, I got a sense that some of those were the most important ones to enable the bigger changes to take place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you hit the nail in the head, meaning that, you know, to have a successful and flourishing business, you need to have an engaged population of employees, a team that is really engaged with where you're going. And I've heard some people saying, you know, but if the business is successful, engagement will follow. I think it's the other way around. When you do have engagement behind the business, when people understand the bigger picture, you know, where we're going, why we're going there, how each one can contribute, what does it mean for each one of them individually, then engagement will go up. And when that happens, the business will become stronger and stronger. So that's the first point. I think the other point that is important to mention is that it's not a straight line. You don't start and then things start to happen and then people start to believe on the vision and then eventually it happens. There is a lot of zigzag happening. There are a lot of unforeseen obstacles that pop up. And I think the approach over there is to recognize that you can't plan for everything. And particularly we saw that last year, right? So who could have, you know, thought about what happened? No matter what business plan every corporation in the world had last year, I'm sure they went, you know, and in the down the drain, and they had to rethink completely how they would operate. So accepting that you can't control everything is an important thing, but also being on your feet to quickly adapt. And coming back to our earlier discussion around, you know, how some smaller players are able to be successful is exactly because they do that. And you know, it's easy in a larger organization, you know, with a famous matrix model, a lot of different layers. You know, it's difficult to keep in touch the higher you're up in the organization with the reality that is happening in the ground. And I think in a smaller company, there is more direct contact and a higher level of risk in the end. So, you know, you need to be courageous. You need to make some tough decisions. Not all of them will work. And you just move on. And, you know, talking to, you know, small-sized company entrepreneurs early in their journey, you see that a lot. They don't mind failing. I think in bigger organizations where a failure costs very little in terms, you know, what are the total business results? And in one market, we did something that didn't work. Who cares? That didn't, you know, affect the bigger picture. In a small organization, this kind of failures could be fatal. And yet they embrace them. They say, fine, it's part of the business. Not everything will work. And they just move on. They just, of course, don't repeat the same mistake. And that culture is a culture that, in my view, brings more innovative thinking, willingness to try new things, change the business model, and grow.
Now, you've mentioned, Konstantinos, that at some point one needs to point to an early success, keeps the team motivated, kind of replenishes the kind of our emotional bank account, and gets everyone to kind of challenge some of their own assumptions, maybe those who didn't believe that finding those pockets of growth will be successful. And I remember you shared with me of one particular market outside of Greece where you suddenly discovered success. So maybe share with us a little bit of what happened while your own kind of home market went into meltdown. How did you find those pockets of growth? And what did you learn? What did you and your team learn in that process?
We talked about Greece being a market in a tough situation. So I'm not going to come back to that. I'll mention, for example, Israel, which, you know, in the total size of the business that I was managing was a relatively small part. You know, if you look at the population, the size of the economy, Israel versus Italy versus France, Spain, it's smaller, right? Yeah. So yet the team there had the courage to put on the table and propose a very aggressive growth plan over the next 3 years, double-digit growth, which was, you know, close to 2.5 times the market growth at the time. And you know, they convinced us, us meaning myself and my team, you know, representing the corporate or higher up in the organization, that not only did they have, you know, a strong plan, but they have the within themselves the energy and the passion to make it happen. And I will tell you that probably, you know, statistically 70% of the strategies fail. Mm-hmm. And they fail because, as we know from Peter Drucker, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So when the culture comes in the way, even the best strategy will not succeed. So over there, I see an alignment, so a well-thought strategy, a well-thought plan to execute the strategy, and a culture that will make this work. And it did. And it still does. So even beyond the first 3 years of growth, the information that I received from the team, because we keep in touch, is that the business is still flourishing. And you know, success breeds success in the end. You know, if you were willing to bet your money, I would. You know, I personally would bet on a team that has been successful versus a team that has suffered year after year after year and trying to figure out how to, you know, make things happen.
Now, Konstantinos, when I think about that, it makes me think about the impact that has on the broader organization. I think many leaders that we speak to, you know, find this a challenge where one pocket of the organization succeeds, sometimes extraordinarily, and often they have to protect it from the corporate center. They've got to protect it from the antibodies that very quickly rise up and see the threat to the bigger organization if one had to adopt that new business model, that new commercial approach, or even sometimes simply the culture that was developed in that part of the organization. What did you see? What did you observe? And how did you help manage that tension between now very successful small country operation with lots of passion and energy and the guts to go and deliver double-digit growth over a period of time. And perhaps other parts of the organization that could not understand, replicate, follow through on something similar. How did you manage those dynamics? And in what way was it helpful to have that part of the organization succeed beyond the plan, beyond expectations?
Well, it's extremely helpful in my experience to have that within your area of business. I think sometimes you hear the comment, yeah, but this is a small market, things happen there. You know, we are in XYZ large market where things are complex, the customers are difficult, blah, 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 right? And I think myself, you know, coming from a small market like Greece and having worked across big and small markets, I think that's simply not true. You know, in a small market, you have less resources. You know, people multitask, they take more risk, this is true, but it's not that business is easier there, far from it. And I'm sure you've heard it in, you know, someone comparing, I don't know, South Africa to the UK, right? And how things are difficult in the UK and how things are easy in South Africa. You know, what a load of crap, right? So that's the first thing. And what I did in this case is, I think, best practice examples and good ideas can come from anywhere, big or small. I want to provide equal visibility, respective of the size. And I usually invite the people that have done it to explain to us the journey, not just the results, because the results speak for themselves. You know, how they came about the idea in the first place, what obstacles they encountered. How did they overcome the obstacles? You know, how did they change their original strategy to adapt? And I think that tells a story that starts to resonate to a broader organization. I think the second point that you mentioned about antibodies killing a new idea, I think that's there for sure. And you see in some cases, bigger corporations trying to innovate outside of the core body of the business to avoid that from happening. But again, it depends on the culture of the organization. If it is a learning culture, if it's a culture where people embrace new business models, new ideas, embrace a certain level of risk, that can happen. If it is a more bureaucratic, I would say slow in decision-making and very risk-averse organization, I think that new business is better served elsewhere. So that would be my answer to your question.
Konstantinos, when you kind of look back, we it's always nice to have 2020 vision when you look at the kind of pressures and challenges and learnings that came out of the pandemic and the way we had to navigate it. If I had to take you back to 2018 or even early 2019, anything that you would have done differently, whether it's a different speed or doing it completely differently, in a different way, a different approach. And you can kind of look back and say, I've learned something through the past year, through this very extraordinary period, that if I had known or could imagine that before, we could have done something differently. I guess it's part of being a learning organization, right?
Yes. And I would say probably we had underestimated the speed of consumers evolving to become online shoppers in pharmacy. And there are so many regulations, you know, particularly in Europe, Southern Europe, preventing that to happen. So sometimes you get into the mindset of saying, yeah, but government will not allow this, but the lobby of the pharmacists will not permit this, but, you know, the business environment is not ready for it, etc. And then you have something as disruptive as the pandemic that throws all that away. And then eventually, you know, consumer behavior starts to change, you know, things start to happen. So I guess one would be that the speed of change towards the e-pharmacy has accelerated and you know, we could have done more on this. I think the other topic is around, you know, the technological impact on the industry. Yes, we did see, you know, some smaller players trying, you know, to crack the consumer needs and develop a product that was not, you know, a cream that you put on your skin or a pill that you ingest, but really driven by a technology. And we had some examples and we experimented with that. I think we underestimated how fast this was going to evolve. And again, we start to see now some of those disruptors bringing products into the market. And of course, they're not proven yet, so we have to see. But I think we might be surprised how the industry may look a few years down the road. So I would pick those two with hindsight, of course, in saying, should we have done more? Should we have invested more in those two areas?
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, Konstantinos, when I kind of when we met for the first time and you kind of shared with me your history and I kind of had a quick look at your profile, you've certainly had the privilege of enjoying some of the more prosperous periods in the industry, but you know, your experience speaks also a lot to managing crises and managing very challenging situations, sometimes quite unforeseen, like the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I guess kind of as my last question is, if you had to leave any lessons for those listening, for the executives that listen to our podcast, that are trying to find the link to their organization and the situation that they're in, knowing that you've battled some of the more hair-raising moments, whether it's the evolution of the European Union or you know, even broader societal changes, and we spoke through some of those during our conversation, what would be the things that you would like to leave with them most, almost irrespective of which industry they find themselves in?
Yes, I will start with something that I am personally, you know, also working on to do more of, and it is to visually show my empathy for what people are going through. And I'm stressing the word visually and communicating it, because many times, you know, we see people going through some tough times, we really want to help, but we don't always extend that hand, we don't sit down to have a personal discussion. Business, you know, is always you know, plentiful, and it may distract us. So I think that's the first thing. And I've heard so many stories, or personal stories, from friends, from family, that are going through some really tough times during the pandemic, and yet having to, you know, work a good 10 hours in front of a screen without any personal human interaction, without even taking, you know, a lunch break with some colleagues, and you know, with kids in the background, with trying to get the basics, thinking how to take care of their parents. So that's a difficult situation on a personal level, right? And I think we need to recognize that in a way that people feel respected, and that the company in a certain way understands their troubles. I think that the second one, and I think it's equally important, is when we are in a crisis of that magnitude, we need to make some quick calls on how we're going to manage it. You know, avoid going, what I was thinking back in March, yeah, by the summer, everything is going to be nice. Yes, maybe, but in all likelihood, it will not. And when you hear the scientists, you know, talking in a serious tone about that, you don't think that this will be solved by the summer. But I heard a lot of business people having this naive, in quote, hope that this will be behind us very soon. And I think it's important, because, you know, you have to decide, are you sprinting or are you in a marathon? Because if you sprint in a marathon, and I hope you're a runner like I am, you're not going to finish, because you're going to, you know, waste all your energy early on. So that's important to understand, what kind of race are you in. And obviously, in a crisis, you know, if we make the analogy of an operating room, you need to stabilize the patient, you know, stop the bleeding, take some quick discussions, but then take a step back and do a proper diagnosis. So, you know, what's really happening here? Is it, you know, for example, the pandemic that is causing that, or is there an underlying trend that was already there and we hadn't picked up, will be there even after the pandemic will go away? And again, focusing on the consumer, as we said earlier, to understand, you know, what are the habits that are starting to form? You know, for example, a habit may take between 3 weeks and 9 months to form, depending on, you know, whether the experience is bringing value, it's a positive one, etc. So really understand how much of those trends that we're starting to evolve are here to stay. And how much is, yeah, when the stores open, everything will be back in normal. I think a lot of them really are starting to take a strong foothold. And if you miss that, you don't only suffer during the pandemic, you will suffer afterwards as well, because you're not going to be prepared to offer what the consumer expects and wants.
100%. And I think it was an opportunity for moments of reflection, I guess, that you're inviting us into, that will give us those insights. Konstantinos, thank you for the time you've spent with us. Thank you for all those insights and the kind of eye-opening opportunities into your world, into what you and your team have achieved, and the many learnings and lessons that came along the way. I really appreciate it. I'm sure our audiences appreciates that as well. And as always, we'll continue the conversation once the podcast goes live. So thank you. Very much appreciated.
Absolutely. A pleasure to be here. And definitely thank you for an interesting discussion, and looking forward to continuing this over the next weeks and months.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.